Okay. So the other kind of practical details that you perhaps need to know are that the website is available for comments, basically so that you can share your experiences and observations and thoughts and questions. Mostly in the last in recent classes, I've left that for class discussion, and I don't check in very often. But if there's something specific, a question that you have that you want to address to me during the week, post it there, and if I don't see it, somebody can let me know, I think, that or send me an email, that'll work too, and I could post then. The other practical issues are, this is a short course, and the reason for that is that I'm going to be out of the country later on this fall, and so it's just a matter of my schedule. But I think it'll work fine. What we're going to cover is we're going to read consecutively through the first half of the space section of Dynamics of Time and Space. And our theme is why nothing matters. And I'll say something about that in a minute when we get going. Another practical issue is that typically what we've been doing is at some point during this phone call, we'll do a short, very short practice, and then I ask people to comment on that. And the comments, for reasons I still don't completely understand, a lot of people prefer to make their comments in the chat box if the people who are online. I'm going to disappear for a moment. Excuse me. Okay. People seem to prefer to use the chat box and type their questions and comments, and that's fine. I was just surprised when I realized that that was the kind of default mode. But you can also speak up, and that works fine too. And it's not only a question of commenting on exercises, but whenever you have something you might like to ask about, anything that's not clear, or any thoughts or insights that you have, or directions you'd like the conversation to take. In other words, feel free to speak up at any time. I don't consider it to be an interruption. I consider it to be an interaction. And I think it's very important for us to interact. Kathleen reminds me that another element to know about is that every week I will post an orientation. Since I'm traveling, I'm not quite sure how that'll work today, but actually it'll probably be fine because I'll be on the train and I'll probably have time to do that orientation. So it's an orientation to the next week's reading and sometimes also a review and reminder of what we did during the discussion. So those are all the, one more practical thing, and that is that because it's going to be a short course, I thought what we could try doing this time, we haven't done this before, is schedule a day in December. So it would probably be a Saturday, and we'll ask everybody to take a good part of the day to practice, and we'll set up a kind of schedule of practice. So it'll be like a little mini retreat. And then the Sunday morning after that, in the usual time slot, we'll have an online discussion about that. So that's an experiment. We'll see how it works. And I'm thinking it'll probably be around the very middle of December. It depends a little on my schedule, and I don't know yet how that's going to go. So that'll be a new factor, and a little later on we can propose a specific date, and if people have trouble with it, we'll try to adjust, but there's probably not going to be that much flexibility there, but somewhere around the middle of December. Okay, now we're done with all the practical things, as far as I know. Are there any questions at this point? Anything that wasn't clear in what I said, or anything you've been wondering about?
I was wondering one thing.
Yes.
Is there going to be a new web page? or are you going to use the 2011
I think we
content
decided.
model?
I think we decided to set up a new web page. It might be that provisionally we stay with the old one because we're switching over the way that the website works over the next 2 or 3 weeks. It should still look basically the same, but we're behind the scenes. We're making some changes, so it might be that it's just easier to keep going with the old website. But I think Kathleen can let people know once we set that up. I haven't actually thought about that for a while. So, okay. So let's jump into it. The reading for this week was posted on the site. It's the first chapter of Dynamics of Time and Space. So these readings are always very short, and that's deliberate. I really want to give us a chance to reflect carefully on the text, because there's always so much in the book. You know, there's always so much in the materials. So the first chapter of Dynamics of Time and Space, which introduces the idea, I think you could say, that space is something we can work with. You know, space is not just empty, and it's not just something to take for granted. When we begin to work with it, we discover things that matter for our lives. And that's what I actually wanted to suggest with the title of this course, Why Nothing Matters. There's kind of a play on words there, because if you think of space as nothing and matter, as physical matter, there is a suggestion made that matter depends on space in a way that we don't usually think of. And we'll probably talk about that during the course. But I'm actually much more concerned with the other meaning there. When we say that something matters, what we're saying is that it makes a difference to us. It has significance for us. And the nothing of space, and of course I put the word nothing in scare quotes, you know, to suggest that it's not nothing in the usual sense, just as space is not space in the usual sense. Once we begin to get into it, once we begin to explore it and understand more about it. But that nothing matters to us very deeply, because if we begin to suspect that by going along with our ordinary sense of space and the things that show up in space and the way that we react to what shows up in space, if we begin to suspect that all of that is open for exploration and challenge and that there are other possibilities, then it makes a profound difference. And you know, a lot of you have been working with the TSK materials for a long time. Some of you are perhaps new to them, but you know, what I think is fair to say is that working with the materials and working with the questions or the way of seeing that Rinpoche introduces in the Time Space Knowledge books does make a fundamental difference. It's so fundamental, and of course people familiar with TSK tend to know this, it's so fundamental that it's hard to put your finger on it and say, well, this is what's different. But over time, and actually from the very beginning, but in a way that deepens over time, there is the opportunity to really experience your life differently. You know, in the TS the CCI website is going to have a new, what we call a tagline. It's when you, in addition to the name Center for Creative Inquiry on the top, it's going to use a little line that we've come up with to try to suggest that. And that line says, more ways to know, new ways to experience. And That's meant to suggest what's possible with the TSK vision, certainly with everything at CCI, but that's because the whole inspiration for the Center for Creative Inquiry is the TSK vision. And that's the characteristic of the vision, is that it introduces new possibilities and more possibilities. And that's very exciting and fulfilling. So that's what we're going to be exploring in this short course. So I did post an exercise on the website, something you could do to get a feel for the course. It was about time, and I, not about space. And I want to say something about that in a few minutes, but I don't want to talk about the exercise right now. Maybe at the end of the class if we have time, which is not realistic. We never have time at the end of the class. But let's pretend people could talk about it, or certainly they could post comments about it on the website. So I'm not going to talk about the exercise right now, but I am instead going to start talking about the chapter. So Rinpoche starts off with this kind of thought experiment, and he says, well, take an object in space, perhaps a cell in your body, and imagine pulling on the edges so that it gets gradually gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And the question he raises is, after a while, wouldn't it just disappear? Because it gets so big that you can no longer identify any of the elements on it. And this is a little bit like a video that a lot of you may have seen called Powers of Ten, where it starts off in galactic space and then it zooms in and zooms in and zooms in and until you finally find yourself looking at someone lying on a beach, I think it is. And then it zooms in beyond that inwardly, and you start to see cells and molecules and atoms and so on. And that's kind of the idea. It's like depending on the perspective or the scale that you're looking at, things appear and disappear. And anybody who's used a microscope knows that too. If you change the magnification on the microscope, it just gets, you enter a whole new world. So, it's like the things that you were looking at before are gone. And there's a whole new range of things to look at. So that's the basic idea that Rinpoche raises. He starts off by, or he asks a question almost in passing that I want to call your attention to. I think it's right in the first paragraph. Let me look. He says, one moment. Yeah, in the second paragraph, in the last sentence, he said, if we did this, and if everything disappeared in the sense that he's describing, would something be left, and what would that something be? And he asks, without making any claims, he says, would there perhaps be an associated field of energy with a distinctive field? Now, I'm not going to try to answer that question. I don't think Rinpoche answers it particularly. I think he just raises the issue, and it's an interesting issue. So you start off with this cell, let's say, and you expand it, you make it bigger, until in the end there is nothing left. That is to say, the original object has disappeared. But he asks, well, would there still be a field of energy that is associated with the cell that was there originally? And of course, this could be true for anything. If you took a human being, or if you took a mountain, or a molecule, it doesn't matter. Does an object that appears in space leave a kind of signature, even after it's gone? What he calls here an associated field of energy with a particular field. And that's a very interesting question, and I really don't have anything in particular to say about it, except to ask, what it presupposes. If the fact that the object used to be there and now it's gone, although in the experiment, in the thought experiment, it's not that it went somewhere else. It's just that your perspective has shifted. That's what makes it disappear. So in a sense, you could say it's still there, but it's no longer apparent. It no longer appears. Is there still some kind of energy that's there? And does that mean then, and this is the range of questions, does that mean that space somehow transmits fields of energy or feelings? Is that the case? Again, I don't intend to answer those questions. I think they're just presented, and it's only this one sentence. He doesn't follow up on it. I think it's just presented as a possibility to get us thinking about what the relationship is between space and the whole range of our experience. And you might think of an example like visiting a place that you used to live in, and you've been gone a long time. I'm in a, as I mentioned at the beginning here, I'm in a hotel room in New York, and I'm on the Upper West Side, and I haven't actually been on the Upper West Side of New York for 40 years, basically. And I'm just starting to remember. I had a girlfriend for a while who lived on the Upper West Side 40 years ago, and I would visit her, and the feel of that is coming back a little bit. Just by my being here, just walking around. The weather here has been beautiful, so I'm not here to walk around. I'm here to do things, but I can't help walking around. So I've enjoyed it, and I'm beginning to get a feel. Well, is that feel connected with space? Well, no, it doesn't seem like it. If anything, you might say it's connected with place, right? I mean, here I am in this old place. Does that mean that I'm occupying an old space? Not really. I mean, that's not how we use the word ordinarily, but it's something to think about. What's the relationship between space and place? In Knowledge of Time and Space, another book in the series, Rinpoche raises the question, when you move from one place to another, do you take your space with you? And again, I think the natural answer is to say, well, no, of course not. You are in one space, which is neutral, and you move to another space, which is neutral, and yet there's a certain sense in which it feels like you haven't changed places. I mean, you have in terms of in relation to your environment, your setting, but you yourself have not gone. You continue to be where you are. You always are where you are. So what does that have to do with space? Is it just a kind of question of psychology here? Those are interesting questions. They're not really questions that, they don't, that's not where the book goes. It doesn't raise those issues. But the reason I'm kind of dwelling on them to begin with is because it's really valuable to start thinking about space and place and how we occupy space and how we move from one place to another. It's valuable to bring those questions alive in our minds, or our experience really better, so that we're actively engaging the question of space and not just having it be a nothing. But have it be a kind of an active part of our experience. That's really what I'm suggesting here. Okay, let me just stop there to see if anybody has any comment or questions about that. I know we're just getting started, so you may not know. Yeah, go ahead.
Could
Great.
we think of energy as time?
Well, I want to talk about time in just a minute, and not
When he talks
necessarily.
about an energetic field,
Oh, I
could that be
see.
a field of time?
Okay, yeah, that's interesting, and I think there is something to that, and I actually, raised that question, you know, it's like the cell that you were expanding is gone, but in some sense it's you know, you'd say, well, but it was there. And so does its energy persist? You know, its former presence manifest in space? And that's really a question about time, isn't it? So, and the relationship of time and space. Yeah, I think those are all questions, or, you know, that's the kind of question you want to start to ask. And actually, okay, so I wanted to bring that time dimension in any case. And it actually has to do with this example that Rinpoche gives. He says, okay, you pull the cell apart, and gradually everything that you can point to, every possible particle, disappears. And even if there were some ultimate particle, he says, you know, what does it mean to call it ultimate? You say, well, you can't pull it apart. But if it exists in space, you can pull it apart, or you can expand it, is a better way to say it. That's what it means for something to exist in space, or at least that's how we usually think about it. So if it does exist in space, it can't be a stopping point for this process. And so what he's saying is, in the end, there's nothing left. Now, I think there's a possible objection to that way of doing the thought experiment, and that is to say, it's all a question of perspective, right? So when I'm looking at something, you know, on an ordinary perspective, you know, with just as I walk around the world, I see certain things. If I look through a microscope, I see other things. We already talked about that. And you know, that's an interesting question, whether that's a valid objection or not. Again, I'm not really going to follow up on that. But I want to make a comparison here to time. So you could say exactly the same thing about time. You know, we go for a walk and we look up at a mountain in the distance, let's say, and we say, that mountain is solid and substantial. But if you looked at a very different time scale, if you looked in terms of millions of years, everything would shift and flow, right? The mountain would rise, the mountain would fall, the mountain would decay. At different time frames, you'd see very, very different things happening. You say, okay, there's all those different changes depending on what scale you look at, but something does happen. You know, the mountain does rise and it does fall. It doesn't just disappear, which is kind of what he's saying about something in space. Now, you could argue about that with time, and that would be a kind of a sophisticated argument you'd want to make, having to do with moments in time and what happens from one moment to the next. That's worth talking about, but again, I don't want to go to that right now. What I do want to suggest is you know, it seems to me that one thing that this example of pulling an object apart does point toward is that whatever appears in space is exactly that. It's just an appearance in space. And if you look from another perspective, if you expand it or blow it up, make it bigger, the way that the exercise is suggesting, it disappears. So, you know, I'm really saying take the word appear very literally. From a certain perspective, it appears, and from another perspective, it disappears. And that's it. You know, and we make assumptions about what exists and what doesn't exist. But the experience that we have doesn't justify that. We say the cell is real, and if I pull it apart, I don't see it anymore, but gosh, it must still be there somehow. But really, you know, from a space perspective, in terms of our experience, something appears and it disappears. And that's what it means for, you know, that's all we really know about. the part about saying, well, it really exists and it must continue to exist even after it's disappeared. Well, that's a theory. That makes, that kind of works for ordinary ways of interacting with objects. It certainly makes sense. If I have a ball sitting on the table and then it falls off the table and rolls away, I'd say it's disappeared. Does that mean it doesn't exist? Well, no, we absolutely automatically say, no, of course it exists. I just don't know where it is. It's disappeared. But if we're looking at our experience, that's not so obvious. If you're looking at a thing that is still, and that's why Rinpoche's example is so interesting, the thing is still here, but it's disappeared. Well, in what sense is it still here, and what sense is it not still here? And that's why the questions that he raises about energy and the feel of it, are also very interesting. Okay, that's we're still just on the kind of thinking it through, thinking it over stage, just trying to awaken an appreciation for how space operates in our lives. Now, you might think, and this is something that people say about TSK sometimes, you might think, well, this is just so abstract. This has nothing to do with my experience. I'm not so interested in thinking about space. There's lots of things to think about, and space doesn't seem to be one of the most important or interesting. But if you do a kind of a reality check, if you say, well, what is the significance of this? I'm going to make a claim here, and this is really a claim that we're going to be exploring for the rest of the class, but it's also a claim that I think is, just makes good sense if you think about it. And that is, whatever we care about or react to appears in space. So we may not care so much about the cells in our body. I mean, in one way we do care about them a lot, but we normally think we don't have to pay any attention to them. They take care of them themselves. But anything that we look at, anything that we interact with appears in space. And so, for instance, suppose there's somebody that you're having a hard time getting along with. And that person is a very prominent figure in your life right now, someone you work with or interact with a lot. Okay? So that person shows up for you. If they disappeared in the sense that we're talking about, it would make a really significant difference in your life. Now, you can't take a person and pull them apart, pull them from the edges until they disappear. It's just not how things work. It's only a thought experiment. Well, it's only in a thought experiment that you do that. But it's a tremendously interesting thing to realize that, what appears in space has meaning for us, has the potential to have meaning for us, and what doesn't appear in space, is not available to us in any significant way. Now, I need to immediately address an objection, and I can see, as I said, I have to end right on time today. Basically, on time means 40 minutes. I can see we won't have time to practice this. It's the first class. What can we do? I don't know what that beeping is. I hope it's not me. Well, anyway, seems to be okay. Okay. You could say, well, what about the things in our minds? The emotions we have, for instance, those don't show up in space. Well, for now, we can make that distinction and say, yeah, fine. Later on, we're going to ask whether that's really true. We want to allow for the possibility, I think, that the things that show up, even mentally, have their own kind of space. But we'll see. I do want to make a distinction, or I want to make a comparison here. I wonder if that's, wait a minute. Okay, yeah.
It's when I chat, so I'm sorry about that.
Did so
It's like when I'm
oh, it's
muting or
when you
unmuting,
chat.
okay?
Oh,
Yeah. I'll
okay.
turn it off if I can figure it out. Sorry about that.
Okay. No, I just think it might have been in my room, but anyway,
Blow it up.
right, blow it up, exactly. Okay. I wanted to make a comparison here, and it's going to be probably the most meaningful for those of you who've studied some Buddhist thought, but it doesn't, you don't have to have known about the Buddhist tradition. In Buddhism, if you are looking at something, let's say this person that you're having trouble getting along with, one way to deal with this is through what's called a kind of Abhidharma analysis, and it's an analysis. You break the person down into its constituents, into his or her constituent parts. You say, you know, this person, you can look at their physical parts. I remember hearing a teacher once talking about this, a woman, and she talked about being on a retreat. She said, you know, when you're on a retreat, it's very typical that you kind of get very romantically interested in somebody on the retreat. You start obsessing about them, because that's what the mind likes to do. And she said she found that it was very useful to think about a person on a retreat by analyzing them into their parts. You know, you'd see someone, and it wouldn't be that person. It would be, oh, eyes, ear, nose, throat, hair, body, you know, all these different parts. And when you do, the underlying meaning, the reason, the thing that leads you to become so obsessed with that person, in that example, just disappears. And you can do the same thing on a much more, basic, you know, a more detailed or more sophisticated level. That's a kind of analytic way of doing things, and it's used in certain aspects of Buddhism, but it's certainly also used in other, you know, in other disciplines. You don't have to be a Buddhist to do that. But I want to just draw a comparison or to contrast that with what we're talking about doing here, because here the suggestion is, and if you go back to that example of expanding, you know, something until it just disappears, notice that you're not analyzing anything. You're not breaking things down. You're not saying this is, you know, this has these different component parts. It stays exactly the way it was. It's just that because you're performing a certain kind of operation on it, at least in your thoughts, it disappears. Right? And if you could perform that kind of operation in some other way, and we want to examine in a certain sense, you could say that the time-space knowledge teachings on space are exactly about operating on our ordinary reality, learning to view or understand our ordinary reality in such a way that all of the limits, all of the concerns, all of the difficulties and problems that we have disappear. Not because they've gone anywhere, not because you've analyzed them in some way that makes them go out of existence. They stay exactly what they are, but the part that we consider to be substance, which is why we think, you know, they limit us and restrict us, that disappears. That goes away. So that's a kind of an overview, I guess, of where we're going. And it is a general point that I really want to make. It's really important for what we're doing. And that is that no matter how theoretical some of this discussion sounds, it's not. It's about our lives, you know. So I used the term reality check earlier, and I'd kind of singled that term out as one that I think would be helpful here. When you're reading this material and you're trying to work your way through it and understand what's being said, it's good to think about what it would do in your life. It's good to think about, if this is so, what's the impact? What's the significance? And the basic idea here is that if you begin to understand the nature of space and the special nothing of space, later on in the reading, Rinpoche will talk about it as the zero dimension of space, then everything opens up and all of the restrictions that we ordinarily understand just disappear. Okay, we're going to have to stop there today.
Okay.
I realize, we didn't do a practice, I didn't really encourage too much interaction here, and I apologize for that. But what I would like you to do is kind of play with this idea during the coming week. As a thought experiment, what happens if you expand something? And there is, this is an exercise in the, well, it's not actually in the TSK books, but you find it in the book that I wrote, the When It Rains book. And it's an old time, long time exercise in TSK, about expanding and then condensing. And people always find the expanding part easier. So this is basically an invitation to do that. When things come up in your life, people, things, but also situations, just imagine as a thought experiment, expanding them until they disappear or until what you engage with is not the parts, the component elements of the thing or the situation or the person, but the empty space, and see what that does. Okay, we'll stop there today. Let me encourage you to be active on the web and engage with each other. And I will post the orientation as soon as I can, probably by tomorrow, the orientation for next week, where we will read, I think it's the first half of chapter 2. Okay, thank you very much, everybody.